Across Australia, you're listening to Radio National.
Good morning, this is AM. I'm Tony Yeastley. Labor's national conference at the weekend will be asked to consider a huge rise in the number of refugees that Australia takes in. The Federal Immigration Minister Chris Bowen's controversial proposal would see Australia's refugee intake increased by almost 50% to 20,000. Mr. Bowen says it's only an aspiration with no firm timeline, but reports suggest that the minister's proposal is linked to a wider plan to deter boat arrivals and to reinstate offshore processing of refugee claims. Chris Bowen is speaking here to Simon Cullen.
Well, look, I've had the view for some time that Australia could and should take more refugees, and of course we took a step towards that with the increase of 1,000 a year under the Malaysia arrangement, if that had proceeded. 20,000 is what I think most people who are interested in this space think that Australia could afford, and that's what I think Australia could afford to do. It's an aspiration, there's no timeline that I'm putting on it. I just think it's very important that the Labor platform, which is, after all, a statement of broad objectives, has that objective in it for the first time.
Now, you say that you'd only work to that aspiration if there was a successful regional agreement to tackle people smuggling. Can you explain what you mean by that? I mean, the Bali process, is that a successful regional agreement?
Well, yes, anything through the Bali process would meet that criteria. The point I'm making is that if we are to increase our refugee intake, we would need to do so in a responsible way while we have the fiscal cost of processing boat arrivals in Australia, the very substantial fiscal cost that goes with settling refugees from offshore wouldn't be achievable. If we can come up with a regional framework, a regional agreement to tackle people smuggling, which we've done, by the way, of course, through the Bali framework and our agreement with Malaysia, even though we haven't been able to implement it. So making clearly Labor's view that we do want to take more refugees, we want to give more people the chance of a life in Australia, but we need to tackle the dangerous boat journey to Australia, and if we do so, then we can have that conversation with the Australian people about increasing our refugee intake further. It's important to note that we already take more refugees per head of population than any other country in the world. We have the highest per capita intake, but that doesn't mean that I don't think we can do more still.
Just to clarify, would a successful regional agreement involve offshore processing by necessity?
Well, that must be part of the mix. Offshore processing, of course, is part of our Malaysia arrangement. The point I'm making is you need a suite of measures. Just increasing the refugee intake is not a deterrent to getting on a boat to come to Australia, but if it's part of a broader mix, which would include offshore processing as part of that, then that would be important.
Because just on that, I mean, Senator Faulkner has said that the party platform at the moment doesn't allow for offshore processing, and so there has been some confusion as to what the party platform does allow. Does this, or does the motion that you're going to put up, does that seek to also clarify that issue?
Well, there's been disagreement about the current interpretation of the party platform. There's been different views from those who are involved in writing the current party platform. Both the Prime Minister and I have said that the party platform should be clearer in giving explicit authorisation to regional arrangements, and certainly we'll be going down that path. But in terms of the exact wording, that's something I'll be moving at the conference itself.
The Immigration Minister, Chris Bowen, speaking to Simon Cullen. The refugee intake is just one of several controversial issues to be discussed at the ALP National Conference in Sydney at the weekend. Already, same-sex marriage, uranium exports and party reform are on the agenda, and now seven former Labor premiers and chief ministers have issued a statement calling on delegates not to forget about climate change and pricing of carbon. Speaking on behalf of the group, the former New South Wales Premier Bob Carr says it's an issue capable of winning back disgruntled Labor voters. Bob Carr is speaking here to AM's Naomi Woodley.
We want climate change to continue to be the top of the Labor Party agenda. We are very, very proud that it was a Labor government that got a price on carbon enacted. We worked at this at a state level and territory level when we were in government during a period when Australians first became anxious about what was happening to their climate. And with the passage of the legislation, it's important Labor continue to fight, to work, to crusade for a less carbon-dependent economy. Nothing quickens the blood of a grand old Labor Party, battered and bruised as it is, like a crusade. And there's an opportunity, as the evidence of global warming continues to firm, for the Labor leadership to say to the Australian people, we've read the evidence, and we've got a plan to lead us forward.
As you say, the party has been battered and bruised by this issue. Do you think there's a tendency in federal Labor that now that the legislation is passed, that you know, MPs would just like to forget about it for a little while, to put it off the agenda and focus on other things?
We think that would be tempting and understandable, but as former leaders of state and territory governments who listened to the people and acted on climate change before there was action at the national level, we just urge the Labor Party not to relax its grip on this issue, but to continue to persuade and to win arguments and build support for a modernisation of the Australian economy.
We've heard a lot about issues like uranium, same-sex marriage. Is there room at this conference, which is expected to be quite a heated discussion? Indeed, the Prime Minister has said she wants there to be a lot of noise. Is there room for climate change on the agenda?
Well, those other issues are important, but what could be more fundamental than the way the dynamics of the Earth have changed even in the last 20 years? We ought to be responding to that, the great urgency of that cause, and recognising that comes before all else.
Of course, the conference is also considering the issue of party reform, and you were one of the co-authors of the latest review into the party, the different proposals that are being put forward by the different platforms. Do you think they go far enough?
I support change in the party, but I think more than rewriting party rules is rejuvenating the ethos of the party.
Former New South Wales Premier Bob Carr speaking there with Naomi Woodley. As mentioned, gay marriage is set to be a controversial topic at the Labor conference, and the issue was given extra importance overnight as Queensland joined Victoria, Tasmania and the ACT in legalising civil unions for same-sex couples. In the end, it was a close-run thing. Only two votes got the bill over the line. Emily Burke with this report.
The public gallery was packed and erupted when the vote came through.
The results of the division are ayes 47, noes 40. The question is carried in the affirmative. Just resume your seat.
Order in the gallery.
The debate over same-sex civil unions has dominated Queensland politics in recent weeks, and to the end it wasn't without passion. The final appeal came from the Treasurer, Andrew Fraser, who had introduced the private members' bill.
Tonight is about the universality of justice. It is about high principle, but most of all it's about people. Real people. Living, breathing people amongst us. Tonight may be a momentous one for civil rights in Queensland. We have, as MPs, a choice. To provide the same upfront access to legal and financial rights for same-sex couples as we do for opposite-sex couples, or we can choose to continue to discriminate against them.
Labor MPs were allowed a conscience vote, but opposition MPs voted against it in a block and were subsequently derided by Labor MP Mandy Johnston.
The bad news for those dinosaurs opposite is that they have not been allowed to exercise their conscious vote, and they need to understand that the future is now.
Some from the opposition had few things to say.
The Honourable Member for Bedeset.
Mr Speaker, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
But the LNP's Jared Blay made the case for the opposition.
The LNP will prioritise the issues for all Queenslanders, and civil partnership is not on the priority list in the minds of Queenslanders. The passing of this bill will not save Queenslanders money. It will not ease pressure on their cost of living pressures. It will not get our treasured AAA credit rating back.
The first Labor MP to speak against the bill was Michael Choi.
I can only assure the House and those who are listening that I have no intention to cause harm or hurt. But I must be honest with my own conscience, for without it, I will be reduced to a walking carcass.
He was joined by the Health Minister Geoff Wilson, who changed his vote at the last minute, and he was one of four Labor MPs to vote no.
The more I have thought about it, about what I personally believe in, according to my faith, unfortunately, I can't support the bill.
The Premier, Anna Bligh, told the House that the bill was about human rights and eliminating discrimination.
It may not be a priority for every Queenslander, but it is a priority for those people who live with discrimination every single day of their lives. More and more Australians realise that their uncle, their grandma, the man who works in the shop, their butcher may well be someone in this circumstance. So let me conclude again with the words of Michael Kirby when he said, "Fortunate is a human being, straight or gay, who has such a lifelong love. Evil are those who would deny such a love to a fellow human being.
The Queensland Premier, Anna Bligh, Emily Burke reporting there. You're listening to AM Around Australia on ABC Radio National, where it's just gone 20 minutes past seven. In what's being dubbed as the biggest strike for a generation, an estimated 2 million public sector workers have taken to the streets of London. The strike affected hospitals, schools and a host of smaller local services. Protesters are angry with changes to their pension schemes, working hours and wages. In London, here's Europe correspondent Emma Alberici.
The sights and sounds have become familiar across Europe. Banks engaged in reckless lending got bailed out by governments. Now states running dangerously low on cash are tapping the masses to plug budget black holes. But the taps have run dry.
Why should I suffer? I don't earn a lot of money. The bankers are getting away with, I think, murder. I could class them as traitors, and the government is protecting them.
Schools closed, hospitals and airports faced some disruption. Calls to the London Ambulance Service went unanswered, as up to 2 million people took to the streets. Many in the private sector were not impressed.
I think they've just got to get real, unfortunately. So it's very controversial, but you know, I don't support it. You know, we're having to fund higher taxes, and yet they're expecting us to fund their pensions as well.
Britain's coalition government plans to raise pension contributions by an average of 3% to reduce the multi-billion dollar shortfall between what the workers pay and what's coming out of the scheme at the other end. It wants future pension benefits linked to the state pension age, which will rise to 67. Newly qualified teacher Suzanne Rule addressed an indoor arena in Birmingham.
I can't afford to pay what will be an additional £100 a month towards my pension. I am 25 and I live at home with my parents. I love them, but I want to start my life. Paying more towards my pension and dealing with a pay freeze means that I and all teachers will be taking a hefty pay cut.
The Chancellor has further inflamed union anger by freezing salaries for 2 years and then capping public sector pay rises to an average of 1% for each of the two subsequent years. Labor's Ed Miliband told George Osborne he was out of touch.
Unlike him, I'm not going to demonise the dinner lady, the cleaner, the nurse. People who earn in a week what the Chancellor pays for his annual skiing holiday.
Prime Minister David Cameron labelled the strike action irresponsible.
Despite the disappointment of the party opposite that support irresponsible and damaging strikes, it looks like something of a damp squib.
The rally was generally peaceful, though a group of 300 people from Occupy London, the anti-capitalist protesters camped outside St Paul's Cathedral, stormed the offices of mining giant Xstrata. They were targeting Chief Executive Mick Davis, the highest paid boss of those represented on the London Stock Exchange. He recently awarded himself a 49% pay rise. This is Emma Alberici in London for AM.
Well, as the austerity continues to bite in Britain, the world's top central banks have taken emergency action to ease Europe's debt crisis. Six central banks led by the US Federal Reserve will provide cheaper funding to European banks. The intervention created a surge on global share markets and the Australian dollar rocketed. I'm joined in the studio now by our business editor, Peter Ryan. Pete, good morning. Given that this is a European problem, why have the central banks and the US Federal Reserve decided to step in?
Well, Tony, the crisis in Europe is now threatening to go global, and the fear and suspicion we saw back in 2008 and 2009 when banks were simply too scared to lend to each other is on its way back. We know that money makes the world go round, but without money flowing efficiently, a credit crunch is a real possibility. So the US Federal Reserve, in coordination with the European Central Bank and central banks in Canada, Switzerland, Japan and Britain, will make it cheaper for banks to borrow in emergencies, and this is an emergency. But will this intervention be enough? Economist Robert Talbot of Royal London Asset Management wants to see much more than a one-day confidence builder.
I think that this was a good move, but I'd certainly categorise it as a good start. I wouldn't say that this is a solution. This is something which is alleviating some of the really short-term pain that was really starting to glue up the markets as far as banks and others were concerned. What we do need to see from here are much more significant measures coming through from the ECB to actually help the sovereign bond markets, and almost certainly that's going to be parceled up with some form of closer integration of fiscal policy amongst European countries.
Robert Talbot of Royal London Asset Management speaking there. Peter, the emergency action was clearly good news on global markets, but I don't want to rain on people's parade, but can the optimism of just one day really last?
Tony, investors are taking any good news they can get at the moment, given the potentially catastrophic scenarios of a deep recession or maybe even a depression if this lingers into next year. As a result, the biggest three-day global rally since 2009 has been extended. Paris was up more than 4%, Germany close to 5%, and Wall Street has rallied around 3.5%. But the relief, albeit possibly short-term, will be reflected here in Australia, where the All Ordinaries Index is expected to open a whopping 118 points higher. And the Australian dollar has also rocketed after the news hit, up 3 US cents from just below parity, now 102.7 US cents.
And do you see the Australian dollar sitting at around that level for the time being, Pete?
Tony, there's a possibility that the Australian dollar could plunge to possibly 80 US cents as global investors sink their money back into US Treasury bonds and the US dollar. And we'll get a pretty good indication next week when the Reserve Bank meets, and rates could well be cut down from 4.5% to 4.25%.
I wait to see. Peter Ryan, our business editor. The US Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, likes what she sees in Burma and hopes it's the start of something much larger. Burma has opened its doors to foreign reporters as Mrs. Clinton visits the normally semi-secretive hardline state. Southeast Asia correspondent Zoe Daniel is there.
After previous visits to Burma with small cameras and microphones and no official visas, we're reporting openly here and asking the people on the street if times really are changing. Things are changing, says this man in a local market, and if the government's trying to improve everybody's daily life, I'd like them to do more. In comparison to the surrounding countries, Burma's people are desperately poor. Political repression has stifled business, investment, and attracted Western sanctions, which have stunted both. Now it seems all of a sudden the government's willing to bend. An election last year turned the military government into a civilian one, albeit with many of the same members. Then democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi was released from house arrest. Lately, her party's been allowed to re-register ahead of forthcoming by-elections at which she's expected to stand. And now, Hillary Clinton has arrived. The fact that Hillary Clinton came, we're really proud for our country, says this lady, and she'll renew our country's current situation. Her visit will give Burma's bosses an inkling of what international legitimacy feels like. They plan to chair ASEAN in 2014. Key areas for improvement include the release of political prisoners from the country's jails and the withdrawal of the Burmese military from war with ethnic groups. It's a big ask. But recent developments have seen the biggest changes in 60 years. And as National League for Democracy spokesman Yuen Tan explains, there's finally hope.
Although they are a legal government, it's somehow not satisfactory to the international community. That's why they decided that to talk with Aung San Suu Kyi and find suitable ways to cooperate each other.
I guess the main question is how real that change is and whether it will be lasting change that will lead to real democracy. How optimistic are you?
We are still regard all these changes with extreme caution because we have been under stress for more than 20 years. Because of the changes we are taking as well as the changes by the government, we hope these changes will last forever.
This afternoon, the US Secretary of State will fly to Rangoon to meet pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi. In Naypyidaw, Burma, this is Zoe Daniel for AM.
To finance now, and in New York, the Dow Jones is trading up 412 points at the moment, the Nasdaq up 86, in London the FTSE closed the day up 168 points. As we mentioned, the Australian dollar rocketed up, it's now fetching 102.7 US cents, 76.4 euro cents. I'm Tony Yeastley, and that's AM for today.